Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, it's one of those stories of triumph over adversity. Julius Achon is a world-class middle-distance runner, a dual Olympian. He's the current Ugandan record holder in the 1500 metres event, and one of his proudest moments was carrying his nation's flag in the Atlanta Olympic Games opening ceremony. But before he reached those heights, Julius had to travel a very long road indeed, with a lot of tragedy. At the age of 12, he was kidnapped by rebels and forced to become a child soldier. He's seen friends and family killed, his village has been destroyed. Julius now works as a professional pacemaker. He also runs a charity called the Love Mercy Foundation, and he's in Australia, so I'm so glad we can get his story in person. Julius, welcome to Australia.
Oh, thank you very much.
Let's start off with your story. Let's start with your childhood there. So somewhere in there amongst eight children, aren't you?
Yeah, one of the eight.
Tell me about your childhood, where you grew up in it.
Oh, I grew up in Uganda, the northern part where the war been over 21 years since 1986. At the age of 12, 1988, the war rebels came to my village and they raided 15 boys, including I myself. We were all given guns. We walked 156 kilometers in 3 days.
Where were you marched to?
We walked in the bush, you know, to have our, like, assembling place.
Yeah, kind of training?
Yeah, for training as to be a child soldier.
Yeah.
And we were forced. If you don't, you would have to be killed. So the only choice we had to move.
So they came through, they took 15 of you children and turned you into child soldiers. What happened to the rest of the village?
But the rest of the village, everybody were hiding, you know. The girls were being forced to be like wives, you know. And then the younger boys, they're forced to be child soldiers.
And then you spend 3 months as a child soldier.
In the bush, yes.
What did they train you to do?
Well, they just teach you how to shoot the guns, to go in the villages, robbing food, beating people up, killing and torturing, doing some funny things, you know.
And this is the Lord's Resistance Army,
isn't it? This is the Lord's Resistance Army.
Which wouldn't have really been around for very long before they came through and took you. I mean, this was in 1988. And didn't they only form in the mid-80s, I think?
Yeah, they formed a group in 1986, 2 years before.
So they're very new.
Then they disagree with the present government, who is still leading up to date.
Yes.
They formed their own group.
So once they trained you, they then sent you out on raids?
Yes. Once you're trained, they sent you out in raid. And government military would kill mainly more kids because we would not have experience, or the kids would not have experience to learn how to fight, to crawl. So most kids end up being killed by the government.
So the child soldiers are the most vulnerable. So,
yes.
So you, as just to clarify, you as children go out on these raids into villages, and then the government forces would obviously wanting to be defending villages or whatever, but you'd be the easy targets because you don't have very much training. You don't know how to be snipers, really, do you?
Yes. Then basically the kids, their job, like, to go in, like, clinics, looting, like, drugs, you know, to bring for the bigger people. You know, we would be like an escort, you know, to the bigger people.
So you did that for 3 months. I mean, did they ask you to kill anybody personally?
Yeah, I was asking, but I refused. So when I refused, my boss, he beat me like I couldn't even sit for 7 days, you know. And he told me, said he could have killed me. Lucky enough, I was related to him, you know.
You were related to him?
I was related to him. He told me, said, I'm his relative, he could have killed me.
The only reason why he spared your life is because you were a relative, and yet he still gave you a hiding so bad you couldn't sit.
I was still beaten. I couldn't sit on my butt for 7 days.
How do you get over something like that when you're 12 years old and you have these kinds of experiences? I mean, do you have flashbacks even today?
Well, right now I don't have it because when I came as a true believer, then I started praying.
Yeah.
You know, but before I was like dreaming at night, waking up in the middle of the night, too scared. I would not see things like police or any metal with a drop with a loud sound would scare me.
Wow. Julius Achon is our guest on Open House. Tonight at 12, he was forced to be a child soldier in the Lord's Resistance Army. He now runs a charity. You're going to hear more about that very, very soon. You're 12 years old. You've had this training. You're a child soldier for 3 months. Then you get an opportunity to escape.
Yes. Oh, we got the opportunity to escape by government plane coming to attack the camp where rebels were. We were over 1,000 people. So that very moment when the plane started shooting the bullets, then we dropped all our guns. Our bosses were running all different directions, 15 of us gathered together from the same village looking for the direction back to our homes, which are 156 kilometers. We walked for 3 days. On the way, the planes were tracking us down, mistaking us to be the rebels.
Mm.
And unfortunately, 9 of my friends were shot dead. And we were crawling up, down like a monkey. That's the only way, you know, we would escape. You see a friend being shot, nothing you can do. You run for your life.
To keep on going.
Yeah. 6 of us made it home.
How close were you to those other 9 children?
Well, we all live in the same village together. You know, we know one another very well, and we
play. So if you're not, you know, literal brothers and sisters, I guess you're village brothers and sisters.
We call ourselves the same clan, which is a long time, fourth generation, same grandfather.
What is left of your village when you get back?
In the village, people, our parents were all hiding in the bush, because every evening people have to sleep in the bush. Daytime you stay home. Mostly they were attacking people late night during the sleep. So we reach home, we found our parents were in the bush. They came in the morning. They were all fearing to see us until we called them by the names. We yelled, we said, "We are the one, we are back." We got reunited with our parents.
Mm.
They were so grateful to have us back home. But those who lost their kids, they were mourning, they were crying with the tears. So it was such a bad...
Emotionally, it would have been very much a mixed event.
Yes.
Elation to get home and yet mourning over those who couldn't get home.
Yeah.
Let's talk about your faith then. At 12, were you... you'd been raised a Christian, hadn't you? You'd been raised with the Christian faith?
Well, you know, as I always said, there are very many ways of being a Christian. You know, calling yourself a Christian, there's a way of being close, having a relationship to God. Uganda, 42% are Catholic, 42% are Protestant. So we call ourselves Christian, which is not enough.
Mm.
But to being born again or repentance, that's all different. You know, like I became born again in 2005, where I learned how to speak to God, like praying, reading Bibles, seeing what is being spoken in the Bible, which is God, you know, because the word of God, it's in the Bible. Like I always quote like Matthew 10:13, which says, "Whoever calls me Lord, Lord will be saved." But how can you be saved when you don't believe in me? Or how can you hear me when nobody has ever brought my words to you? So that's when I became born again.
And how did that happen? How did you realize that you were Christian in name, but not actually in spirit, not in heart?
Well, one time, 2004, after I lost my mom when she was killed, frustration, I was being desperate. I thought drinking would cool me down when I'm stressed. But it was taking me in a different way where it wasn't a good thing at all for me. Then one time I was completely drunk, and the next morning I woke up, my spirit took me like to read the Bible and to go to church. I repented that day. Then from that time, I started having several dreams every time, and I would see my life changing each and every time.
You're talking about literal dreams while you're sleeping?
A dream. We never have water in my village. I dream one time God showing me a big ocean flowing in one of our property. Then I went home, I told my parents and other village people, I said, "This very spot, I see a dream, a big ocean being pumped up here." 2 years later on, the CARE International Water went back to my village. They made a survey, the whole village. And that very spot where I had a dream, with a vision, while I was in the United States, my dad called me, said the very spot the water has been drilled. And that's the first water ever in my village where 600 people drinking clean water.
That's amazing. Let's return to your later years in a minute. You then start running as a child.
Yes.
And there's a story as to how you start running.
I went back after we escaped from the bush in 1989, back to school. But my parents couldn't afford school fee as well. I would go to school as sneaking, because the teachers in Africa, they cane you when you don't pay school fee.
They cane you, even though it's your parents' responsibility to pay the fees, you get caned.
You cannot go in a class. But I would go, you know, I have myself, like, I make sure I sneak. So one day, a teacher came to beat me, I jump over the window. Then the next day I would go back, I would never give up. So the school championship started, athletic. I said, I'm going to try. Each and every morning I would wake up 6 a.m. in the morning to go for a run before a class, like 7 kilometers. Athletics championship started. I found myself winning 4 races in that very day. And I was chosen to represent the district, but there was no transport. Then on Thursday, I told my parents I'm going 72 kilometers to represent my district. So I ran, I walked 72 kilometers.
No shoes?
No shoes at all. No nothing. I had only one cloth. And reaching there, I registered. Then I won 3 events. And from that time, I started excelling. And I was given a scholarship in the whole government to be number one in the whole country as a 13 years old.
13 years?
13 years old.
You're number one in the country?
I was number one in the country, both senior or junior. I was running like I was weighing only 48 kilos. Very skinny kid.
That's probably what gave you your speed. You didn't have a lot to carry.
No.
Amazing story. Open House is what you're listening to. Yeah. Julius H. Hon is a dual Olympian runner. He also was a child soldier, if you've just heard. And he's also running a charity. We're going to get to that soon. So then you get to the highest point as a runner in Uganda. And then you're spotted by an American talent scout?
Yes. Oh, in 1994, Uganda, I was chosen to represent World Junior Championship in Portugal. My first time ever to put on the shoes. I won the 1500 meter gold medal in Lisbon, Portugal. And then from that time, I was chosen by one of the American track coach in Virginia, Washington, D.C. to come on scholarship. And that was the best dream ever in my life. And in 1996, I was chosen to represent Uganda in Olympics, being a team captain, a flag bearer. In June, I was the world fastest 800 meter in the whole of the world. I led for 2 months, 144.55. Then 2000, Sydney Olympics, I still made the team. I ran 1500 meter semifinal. I missed it by 1/10 to be in final. And I was a team captain and a flag bearer as well.
And then 2004, it's the sad moment because you were all set to participate in Athens Games themselves. And that's when you lost your mum.
Yeah, 2004, I lost my mum in June. I'd already qualified for the Greece Athens Olympics. So she was shot and she stayed 4 days with the bullets on her. I could not afford money for surgery.
Yeah.
There was no nearby the hospital. Everything was incredible. So
she was just the victim of another raid? I mean, who shot her this time?
Oh, the rebels.
The rebels again.
Yeah, the rebels, because they were going back to the village to look for food, to bring food in town. So then from that time, my body just could not take it because I had never seen my parents. They never heard from me. And then that moment, that's when like I started like to hear like about, there were no phone those days, like cell phone, you know. So when I had that, it kind of broke my heart and I was so discouraged and I could not sleep until things changed when I got repentance and being close to God.
So there's no way you could compete after you'd lost your mum like that. So you carried the flag?
Yeah, I carried the flag.
Got to represent your country, but couldn't actually
Uganda
complete.
And, yeah.
So let's talk about the charity then. Love Mercy Foundation, you've called it. And it starts with you going back to Uganda in 2003. Yeah. You see the plight of the children there.
Yeah, 2003, I went first time ever to my village. So everybody were, they were all living in town in the refugees camp. Then kids who could not stay, they would sleep underneath the bus. I went for morning run one time. I found these 11 kids. They all laying underneath the bus. So I look, I check, I ask them, I said, hey, what are you all doing? They said, you know, our parents are being shot. So when I heard that, it was so painful because I know they were all dead. You know, they used the word shot. Some of them, they were too young. They didn't know their names. And then I asked them, I said, could you walk to my home because I don't have money on myself at the moment? So because they asked for money, I'm like, you see, I'm from running. I can't carry money in this such a dress. I walked them to my home like 2-3 kilometers. I talked to my mom, was still alive, my dad, if they would take care of them. Then when I come to United States, I would be able to send them money. Yeah, they accepted. And from that time, I started supporting them. And I send money home. People bought food for $100, like 100 kilos of beans.
It's amazing of your mum and your dad back then in 2003 to take in those 11 orphans as well. I mean, it must have been a great burden for them. It must have been quite a lot of work.
Yeah, it was a lot because they were all sharing a small grass house with the 25 people. you know, including my brother and sister. They were, everybody would sleep like the way chicken lays.
Yeah.
You know, it was tough. They did that until right now I got 4 bedrooms where I'm still keeping 25 people in
four bedrooms. So now you got 25 orphans?
Yeah, 25.
With the love message.
22 plus my brothers and sister.
Okay.
Yeah, so there are 25 people in 4 bedrooms.
So when your mother was shot in 2004, that wasn't just simply the horrific loss for you of your mum and, of course, your brothers as well. Actually, those orphans lost their foster mum.
Yeah, that was tough. And that's the time when things change. And there's no way I would drop these kids. Like, okay, now I've lost my mom, I ignore you. But my heart was always strong on them.
And who looks after them now? Like, who is their caretaker when you're not there?
I have a brother who is a fourth born in our family. His name is Jimmy. He was going to school. I was paying his school for a $300 semester. So I told him, I said, look, you really know how to write and to speak English. You drop out of this school. I use your $300 to pay the school fee for this 11 orphan. He agreed. So from that time when he dropped, I've given him the responsibility. Now with the friends around Australia, they're supporting, and this kid now, they're getting more sponsored and buying food. So they're getting a better education and they're ranking top high in their classes, like number 2, number 3, respectively, their classes.
Yeah.
Before, they were like number 64, number 50. And one of the oldest boys, 17, is ranked number 1 in Uganda in track and field, running 800 meters.
It's following after your footsteps, eh?
That's what you know, I really need. And I encourage them every morning before classes. They all run 3 kilometers before classes.
Do they?
So that's the only way I feel.
At the very least, it'll keep them fit, but it might actually...
And they all read Bible.
And they all read Bible.
Everybody have to read Bible.
So you've got 22 in there now, right? And what's the dream then for Love Mercy Foundation? What would you like to do?
Mostly my major goal, to have a clinic. The nearest clinic we got is 72 kilometers. Whoever is sick or giving birth is tough. People can't walk. People give birth home. When you're sick, you just stay home until the sickness goes by itself or you get killed. And then school, we have over 300 kids in my village who can walk from the age of 5 to 6. They can walk 7 kilometers one way. So they have to be matured enough at the age of 8 to be able to start school. Then last year, famine came in my village because people went back home. 11 people died in my village. We are working to buy seeds, which each person we are planning to get the seeds, if they could be self-independence after getting those seeds.
Yes.
But people are so excited because I put a church as well in my village, first church ever in life in 2,000 years, you know. So people used to pray under the mango tree. Now the church has 600 people.
Is that right?
I expected to be 150, but now it's 600. I may need to break.
Well, certainly you're doing that and some wonderful things happening in your village as a result. Julius, God bless and thanks for joining us.
Thank
Julius Achon, Ugandan Olympian, founder of Love Mercy Foundation. Pretty inspirational story, isn't it? LoveMercyFoundation.org is a website if you'd like to get involved. LoveMercyFoundation.org.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.